Welcome to Dig Deep, the mining podcast. In this podcast, we go deep into mining news, hot topics, and live interviews with mining professionals and leading figures in the mining industry. Introducing your host, Rob Tyson, founder and director of Mining International and Mining International Executive, a leading global mining recruitment and headhunting agency.
Hi, mining community. Welcome back to another episode of the Dig Deep, the Mining Podcast. And today's guest is Ken Bridston, who's currently the non-executive chair at Patriot Battery Metals, who are a hard rock lithium exploration company focused on the advancing its district scale 100% owned Corvette property located in the James Bay region of Quebec. Ken is a mine engineer from background in from Western Australia's Score Mines, with over 25 years experience in both surface and underground mines, and has been involved in the development of Atlas Iron Limited, and also more recently discovering the world's largest hard rock lithium deposit for Pilbara Minerals in Western Australia. So Ken's on the podcast today to obviously talk about Patriot Battery Metals and what they're looking to achieve. So that's a welcome, Ken, to the podcast. How are you doing, Ken?
Going well, thanks, Rob. And actually, I'm CEO and managing director now, having taken on the next phase of development of the Patriot project, Corvette project. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that.
I apologize for that. So yeah, no, you're the CEO now. So you're in the hot seat. So yeah, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your career, and obviously what you've achieved in your career, and obviously notably what you've done with Pilbara Minerals. So yeah, I'll hand it over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. I'm a mining engineer by training, and grew up in Sydney, New South Wales, but travelled to Western Australia in the School of Mines to go through my engineering degree. And I feel like I've been very lucky in my career, been involved in some fantastic projects, worked with some great people. In the last 10 or 15 years, that was really focused on mine development and company development, initially in iron ore with Atlas Iron and then subsequently with Pilbara Minerals. And at Pilbara Minerals, a few highs and a few lows, but mostly lots of fun working with an amazing team. And I feel really lucky, actually, to have been introduced to the lithium industry in my time with Pilbara Minerals, because it's a fantastic industry, fast-moving combination of technology at the back end and you know, lots of lessons to be learned at the front end in the raw materials and value-added chemical space. So, yeah, Pilbara Minerals went through some tough times but came out the other side as one of the more important production centres globally. And I'd done my stint, I think it was something like about 7 years, or just a bit under, and really, honestly, felt like a break, having worked pretty hard in the period of time that we were building Pilbara Minerals. But out of all that, I couldn't avoid coming back, basically, to the lithium game. I enjoyed it too much. And we'd already been introduced to Patriot Battery Metals and the Corvette discovery. And my observation was that it was one of the special ones globally. So I couldn't help myself, and I got back involved, albeit initially as non-executive chair. And then in the last 3 months, lots of discussion at a board level about the company's next phase of growth, moving beyond exploration into the development cycle. And I guess in essence, I put my hand up and said, well, look, I'd really love to be involved in that next phase more fulsomely. So hence taking over the CEO's role and moving to Montreal. Quebec is both a fantastic place to be building a mine, but Montreal is also a nice place to live. So no hardship in that, Rob. But lots of work to do to continue to progress the project, and happily be talking about that a bit more today.
I just want to refer, you mentioned obviously you're back in the lithium space now. What would you say, and obviously lithium has taken a big hit obviously on price. What is special about lithium from your perspective, considering you've worked in obviously other commodities previously? What would you say is different and what you've experienced in the lithium space for you to now go back to now continue working in lithium?
Yeah, it's an exciting industry and it's fast-paced. I think principally because the key motivator of the lithium industry is now the lithium-ion battery. The lithium-ion battery has become the rechargeable battery of choice globally, and is now being deployed en masse. So you can see that with the rollout of e-mobility. EVs, commercials, buses, you name it. Actually, London's a good example, Rob, where you see lots of electric buses now, and electric cabs and the like. So the fact that the lithium-ion battery is being deployed on a mass scale with growth in battery consumption, it's typically been around 30% per annum, sort of roughly, massive growth. What that means is the industry is moving really quickly, and of course, it creates a lot of volatility, and that's why you see pricing moving, between extremes. So a combination of all those things makes it a really interesting place to work as far as mining's concerned. The other thing is it's an industrial mineral supply chain, which is a little bit different in the mining world, but it's being developed at a mass scale. So for mining people, that does represent a bit of a change because industrial minerals have sort of been a little bit of a niche in the mining game. It's mostly been about, the commoditized mineral species, and that's where most mining people have worked. So I think the combination of all those things makes it an interesting place to work. It's part of the energy revolution. I often explain to people, I think that's great for those that are, mining professionals and mining trades. Because it's a key reason to go to work every day to say, well, look, now I'm part of the solution, as compared to perhaps historically being branded as part of the problem. And I'm honestly sort of suggesting that mining is now a really important part of decarbonizing the global economy. So you'll find that's a key motivator for a lot of people, looking to work in, well, in lithium, but arguably the broader sort of critical mineral sphere. So those that are listening today, thinking about mining as a career, well, you can be part of the change now. It's fantastic. So, for all those reasons, great place to work.
And before we start speaking about battery, Patriot Battery Metals, how significant is it to you being involved in obviously discovering the world's largest hot rock lithium deposit?
We're not quite there yet, Rob, but we're definitely heading in that direction. No, well, the Corvette discovery, oh, it's really meaningful on a global scale. It's the largest in the Americas. And our view is it will continue to get larger. It's a really, really amazing piece of geology. And actually, that's what got me involved and excited about participating with Patriot in the first instance. And again, it's a lot of fun. Building mining projects is the best part of the mining cycle. I've been lucky enough to have done a lot of it in my career and I really enjoy it. It's great building the team and building the culture in the company, and being part of, something that's really significant. I guess the last thing I'd say about Patriot and the Corvette discovery is the other reason it's significant is that it's going to become, or we're confident, it's going to become a key part of solving for the new supply chains that are required to be developed ex-China. China is very, very dominant in the lithium-ion battery scene. They control, once you go beyond raw materials, they control typically more than about 80% of the capacity in every facet of the lithium-ion battery supply chain, right from value-added chemicals through to the cells themselves, and I would argue soon to be EVs, if not already. So the West has to build some diversity into their supply chains, and I feel like the Corvette discovery, because of its scale, is going to be a really important part of solving for a lot of North American supply and probably European supply as well.
Can you give us an overview of Patriot Battery Metals? And also, I suppose if you can talk about the management team as well.
No, great team. I'm really enjoying working with them. Great board. And I feel like we've got a lot of the key ingredients to ultimately make for a really successful company. When you're building a lithium mine, especially, where there's not a huge skill base globally for that particular subset of the industry. Typically, what you're doing is you're adapting, you know, from other skills in the mining industry and then sort of plugging them in. Well, we've got that in spades with the Patriot team. So if I start with the board, a healthy mix of the, you know, Quebec centric kind of key players. You know, Quebec is a really important mining jurisdiction globally, and they have a really solid regulatory regime. For all those reasons, it's important that you have the local influence. So we've got some fantastic people from Quebec amongst the team. Pierre Bourguin, I'd point out, he's our independent chair, a lawyer by training, but a really commercial guy and deeply connected through the Quebec community, business community, political communities. So that's a really important element. And then amongst the executives, I don't really want to single anyone out, just simply say that we've got a healthy mix of Aussie expertise and Quebec expertise to ultimately build a mine in Quebec. And yeah, I remain really confident about the team's capacity to get the job done. Quebec itself it reminds me a lot of, you know, Western Australia, one of the world's great mining jurisdictions, but I think Quebec has a, you know, a huge amount to like about it as well. Deep mining culture, lots of diverse mines through the province, and a regime and especially in the James Bay region, where you've got a really sort of important due process for the purpose of responsible mine development. And I think that's equally true. The First Nations with the Cree, who are an important partner in the development of mines in the James Bay region, but then also the provincial government and their views about the development of industry. But in particular, the lithium ion battery supply chain, where they're making a really big effort to capture the key parts of the supply chain right through to building batteries. So a really good job is being done across the board. And, you know, again, hence being happy to be here to be a part of it.
Can you give us an overview of the market structure in Australia, China, compared to the Japan, Korea markets, as it, I suppose, pertains to our expected vision for the North American, European markets?
Yeah, lithium's been a, you know, there's some quirks of history that sort of describe where we've got to today. The Chinese were the first to develop en masse the conversion of concentrates, so hard rock concentrates that contain lithium, and ultimately turning them into value-added chemicals. And they built their industry actually originally based on the technology provided by the Russians who were extracting lithium for the purpose of the bomb, you know, basically hydrogen bombs, and triggers for those bombs were being derived with lithium technology. So the Chinese adapted that technology and they started to grow their industry to create value-added lithium chemicals. Now, of course, the commercialization of the lithium ion battery that started maybe lesser scale, but let's say it started 20 years ago. And in the intervening period, in those 20 years since, they've grown their industry at, you know, some serious scale now, to, as I said earlier, to the point where they now dominate the industry. And Australia, but in particular, Western Australia, has been a key part of their raw material supply. So the spodumene concentrates were coming out of Western Australia, being delivered to China and then value-added to support the growth of the industry. So that really describes the inception of the hard rock supply base. Now, in parallel, of course, in Japan and Korea, they were developing their own lithium-ion battery industry, and the raw materials were perhaps coming from a bit more diverse locations, including the brine sources of supply in South America. But I guess the key point I want to flag is how those two subsets of the industry, so China and then ex-China, behave. They are two different markets. China operates much more in tune with what you would call a merchant model. So in essence, what that means is that any one raw material supplier could sell to multiple buyers in China. And actually the grade of product could be highly varied, you know, as it goes into the Chinese market. The Chinese market can deal with that diversity in both product, where the product comes from, but also the grade of the product, because they have such a diverse industry and everyone can deal with every different specification. So for example, batteries might be lesser in quality going into, let's say, kids' toys or you know, earbuds or maybe even some notebooks, that type of thing, as compared to, say, high-end EVs. Of course, there are some high-end EVs in China and perhaps some of the highest quality in the world now is coming out of China, including high-quality batteries, but they're not all like that. In contrast, in the Western world, which is principally defined by Japan and Korea today, they operate with incredibly high quality thresholds and this process of, you know, qualification to ensure your product is of a high specification making its way into the battery industry. It's a very different model, and it leads to pretty significant differences as to how they deal contractually in those supply chains. In Japan and Korea, it's much more likely to be a linear supply chain. So the same seller of raw material, the same buyer of raw material, very high specification, and contractual terms will match that. What that leads to is a different, a more stable pricing outcome, I think, is probably, you know, the net effect of that as compared to China, where there is incredible volatility. I think you might have mentioned earlier, Rob, we've seen prices go from, you know, $80,000 a ton for chemicals down to, you know, $14,000 a ton in recent months. So clearly that's a significant change. But in Japan and Korea, relatively speaking, it's been pretty stable to the point where today probably most product is more than $30,000 a ton still in Japan and Korea today. So, yeah, nowhere near as volatile. Anyway, what do you derive from that? Well, I think as the North American and European supply chains develop, which is inevitable in my mind, lots and lots of effort now going into creating that alternative, they're going to look more like Japan and Korea, and there'll be significant qualification criteria and hence contractual terms will match that outcome or desired outcome, and it's reasonable to assume pricing will be more stable in those markets. So, yeah, so it's a big change in the industry, but inevitable as the industry grows and the markets get a bit more differentiated.
Going back to the project, what was the decision, made to process the lithium or the ore by DMS rather than flotation?
This gets to the heart of one of the advantages at Corvette. The geology there is really special, and it's hosting scale in the resource, but also really high quality spodumene. And what I mean by that is probably two key things. Firstly, the spodumene is really clean, like an industry term. You know, there's not much in the way of deleterious elements that are mixed in with the spodumene. So a classic might be there's not much contained iron, you know, and that's a key advantage. So that helps with recovery characteristics. And then the other important driver is the scale in the crystals themselves. So to understand that, you've got to go back a step and imagine what was happening at the time the resource was being formed. The temperature and pressure conditions supported the growth of very large spodumene crystals. So they're measured in kind of centimeter, decimeter, and meter scale. Compared to, that's at Corvette, compared to most other locations globally where it's kind of micrometer, millimeter scale. So what that leads to in respect of your question is, it's much easier to recover the spodumene using just dense media separation or DMS. So that's a key advantage because it's easier to build, it's easier to operate, and you can still achieve relatively high recoveries of the spodumene concentrate. The alternative, which is more often deployed in the lithium industry, is that you're using DMS or float, both DMS and flotation, or just flotation to maximize the recovery. And that would typically be motivated by having smaller crystal structure to ensure the right level of recovery. The challenge in that is it's harder to operate and build and operate a flotation plant. So, yeah, so from our point of view at Corvette, key advantage in just being able to use DMS.
Why don't you just tell us a little bit more about the resource and, I suppose, some recent results?
Yeah, it's an incredible resource. It's got serious scale. So in the maiden resource we presented in the middle of last year, 109 million tonnes. But I mean, whilst that's big, I guess another key differentiator is that, you know, 100 million tonnes of that, or 90%, is in one pegmatite. So what that tells you is that the geology is relatively simple, but it hosts very large scale. So ultimately that means it should be easier to mine and recover. But then also we expect it to grow. And we're actively working now towards the upgrade in the resource. We've continued to drill in the period since the presentation of that maiden resource in the middle of last year. The focus has been on infill drilling on that maiden resource. The infill drilling is required to convert the resource to reserve, which would then ultimately support the feasibility studies to come. So that project's gone well, and we expect to upgrade the resource in August this year. As to what to expect, well, there will be some growth in the resource, but because we have continued to extend it, but primarily this drilling has been about the upgrade. So the upgrade from an inferred resource to a significant indicated resource, but also with some growth overall in the resource. That's been our objective in the last 12 months.
The life of mine is shy of 22 years, currently at 800,000 tonnes per annum of spodumene production, which would make it the second biggest mine in the world currently. How achievable is this?
Yeah, well, it's all motivated by that geology. So as long as you've got the scale in the geology that I described earlier, there is no reason that you can't ultimately build a big mine. And I guess that is our expectation, Rob, that the scale in the resource is ultimately going to lead to a big mining operation. And that's going to support the development of multiple chemical facilities downstream, but in particular to support the growth in North America and Europe. So all those things in my mind are readily achievable. Because it's a DMS, it's proposed to be a DMS operation. It's not a particularly complex mine to build. So again, another reason as to why it should be readily achievable. The last point, I guess, just ramming it home too, Rob, is it is absolutely required for the North American supply chain that there is local supply. And you can see that in the behavior of governments. I think that's true in Canada at a federal and a provincial level, especially true in the US, where now significant dollars are being deployed to support the independence of lithium supply. So, for example, just in the last week or so, very, very large loan, as one example, to Lithium Americas from the DOE. You know, that's a demonstration that the US is now heading down a different path to absolutely ensure they have an independent supply chain for the future of the lithium ion battery industry in North America. So, yeah, all those things are key indicators that the mine development at Corvette should be readily achievable.
Talking about obviously local and federal, and obviously First Nations as well. How do they, I suppose, all align? And obviously with the desire to expand the battery supply chain from extraction to transformation, and then obviously to completion of batteries. How are all those different stakeholders local, federal, and First Nations, how are they all working together?
Yeah, well, starting with First Nations, so in the James Bay region, the Cree, I'm really pleased with the relationship with the Cree that the company has developed. And what I've heard and absolutely concur with is this principle that we're partnering for the development of the James Bay region. And that it's responsible development. We're not being, difficult or certainly not cowboys. That we're actually working alongside the Cree to ultimately achieve responsible, mining outcome. I'm optimistic that that's readily achievable, especially in light of the relationship that's already been established with the Cree. Blair, our Chief Operating Officer, and Alex, who's responsible for ESG here at Patriot, have done a fantastic job building that relationship, and I look forward to continuing to grow that relationship as well. At the provincial level, you can see the desire of Quebec and their appetite to build out the lithium ion supply chain. So they've supported battery development with Northvolt, cathode materials with GM and POSCO and EcoPro and Ford, and then chemicals has already started too with Arcadium building capacity in Bécancour. So the next, logical rung in the chain there would be to develop more raw material capacity. And as I alluded to earlier, we think Corbett's going to be an important part of that. Then at the federal level, it's equally true. Canada's motivated to support the critical minerals industry. They've developed independent funds and infrastructure funds to support those initiatives. And then, as alluded to earlier, North America is starting to place some big bets on localizing the supply chains, like that Lithium Americas debt deal that I described earlier. So it's all happening, and ultimately we think Patriot's going to be an important part of that local development as well.
Obviously, building such a large mine, I just wonder if you can just tell us a little bit about the infrastructure surrounding the project.
Yeah, well, the James Bay region obviously carries a lot of significance in Quebec because of the previous development of the hydro scheme, Hydro Quebec. That's been a huge success for Quebec, but also a really important piece of infrastructure. And it just so happens that the Corbett discovery is not that far from one of Hydro Quebec's key dams and distribution networks. And of course, the highway that services the Hydro Quebec scheme, we're only 15 kilometres south of the Trans-Tioga Highway, an all-weather road that supports Hydro Quebec. And then we're about 40 kilometres south of LG4, which is one of their largest dams. So with that comes a lot of complementary infrastructure, the road itself, power distribution, an airport, and they're all within striking distance of Corbett. So for all those reasons, we'd argue, a fantastic infrastructure base. And then you move into the southern half of Quebec and there's moves afoot to continue to support the other part elements of the supply chain in the lithium battery world. So Bécancour has become a key hub with chemicals and cathode materials, and I'm sure more to come.
I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit about mining in Quebec, and obviously for those that are not in Canada or for those that have never worked in Quebec. I understand there's currently 22 mine operations currently in Quebec, and started back in the 1840s. So obviously they've got a long history of mining in the province. Just wondering if you can sort of summarize what is happening within the mining industry within Quebec.
Yeah, it's steeped in history, isn't it? Yeah, it does remind me a lot of Western Australia. Diverse mining, many different commodities, and of course already some lithium mining, so with all of that as a backdrop, it is a really and of course the combination of James Bay, Cree, and the regulatory regime means it's a great place to build, one of the great places to build actually globally. probably sitting right alongside, you know, somewhere like Western Australia. So hence another reason why I'm happy to be here, Rob. So what that facilitates is, a regulatory regime and of course the First Nations familiar with the mining industry, so you're not starting off a really low base, and the regime itself is very structured, which means as long as you're doing sensible work as a mining company, it's of high quality, you can ultimately get a mine approved, and I guess that's our expectation with the Corvette project. And then because there is a lot of mining already going on in Quebec, the community as a whole understands the mining industry and in some way, shape or form, at least partially associates with it. So again, that's another healthy backdrop. Lastly, the skills that you can draw on, because there is a diverse mining economy. There's lots of people that have the right skills to ultimately help the development of our company. So we look forward to being able to recruit them to continue to grow our Corvette project.
Yeah. Obviously, with the lithium price, as we mentioned, has obviously taken a bit of a big hit. What advice would you give to some of the lithium junior miners out there to maybe encourage them in whatever they're doing? Obviously, you've been part of building one of the biggest lithium mines in the world. And currently looking to build another big lithium mine currently. What advice would you give to, say, juniors in the lithium space? Because obviously what's happened more recently over the last sort of 12 months.
I think it's one of those industries where it's coming off a smaller base, but growing rapidly. And what that means is that it will be volatile. There's almost no avoiding it. And of course, there's history to indicate that's exactly what's going to happen. I've been involved since 2015, and already in that period of time, we've seen two cycles. So it all happens very quickly. And that's because the industry is coming off a small base with potentially relatively small supply-demand imbalance creating these volatile outcomes, and taking into account the influence of China. So what do you do as a company? Well, I think there's probably a couple of key drivers. Firstly, you would maintain a healthy balance sheet to the extent that that's possible. But also the team, need the culture, put it that way, that needs to be such that you're flexible and prepared to tough it out. And when I say toughing it out, whilst the downtimes are never that much fun, I can assure you, I guess the truth is, and history indicates, that they don't really last that long. So your ability to come out the other side actually represents your next opportunity. And it is every chance that's just around the corner. In fact, as it plays today, I'm reasonably confident that we've seen the bottom of the market, and I think the growth in China is material. Their moves to dominate the lithium-ion battery industry are, very, very significant, and hence they are the key market driver, and I cannot see them slowing down. Their objective is to ensure that they continue to dominate the lithium-ion battery scene. But now it stretches into EVs as well, and there's every chance they're going to dominate that industry too, if not having already won, I would argue. And then the next industry that's going to become, I would argue, equally important, if not bigger, is what's called the static energy storage business. So using lithium-ion batteries to support the rollout of other renewable resource or power generation, so I think solar and wind, and stabilizing grids globally, both at a micro scale, so adjacent to your house or your unit, but also at a grid scale for large scale energy storage. I think China is also going to dominate that industry. With that growth going on, it's reasonable to assume that a low in the cycle is really not going to last that long.
That's good to hear. And lastly, and concluding, just wonder what the outlook is for Patriot Battery Metals sort of over the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, we're working really hard, Rob. There's a lot of work going on inside the business. So the first of those key outcomes is the delivery of the upgraded resource. And that's important because, well, it'll continue to demonstrate the scale in the Corvette discovery. I've no doubt about that. But it also provides the key link to create the reserve, which then underwrites the subsequent feasibility studies. The feasibility study will be out, the full feasibility study will be out in the latter part of next year. And in parallel, we'll be working through the environmental approvals process. So that's the ESIA. And the combination of the ESIA and the feasibility study then triggers the last of the approvals hurdles. And what that means is that approximately 3 to 3.5 years from now, we should be in a position to start the construction at Corvette. So a lot of work to happen yet, Rob, but very, very pleased to be a part of it and excited about the potential in the combination of the Corvette discovery and what Patriot can contribute to the North American and European supply chains.
Yeah. Ken, really appreciate your time. Thank you for giving us an update on Patriot Battery Metals and give us an outlook, especially give us a positive outlook of the lithium and I suppose highlighting the lithium market. Like you said there, you've already been through two cycles in a matter of 8 or 9 years. And I suppose that gives a good, it gives a good perspective of the market. And hopefully anyone that's involved in lithium space that is listening to this gives them a bit of hope for the future. And like I said, appreciate your time coming onto the podcast. Maybe you can come on next year and give us an update on your progress.
It's a pleasure, Rob. Thanks very much for the invitation.
All right. And also, lastly, obviously, if people want to follow yourself and Patriot Battery Metals, how can they go about doing that? What social media platform channels are you on so people can follow your story?
Yeah, absolutely. So principally through the former Twitter platform, X, and you can follow me at Ken B Patriot and the company at Patriot Battery Metals. So yeah, feel free. And of course, you can jump on our website, all of the latest investor information and presentations there as well.
Yep. We'll include those in the show notes that come beneath for easy access. So so our audience can reach out to you and follow your story. So all the best for the remainder of the year. And hopefully we can chat next year.
Fantastic, Rob. Thank you.
Always. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Look, there's a lot of positives around lithium for the future. So obviously don't be disheartened with obviously the price of lithium at the moment. As Ken's highlighted, he's been through two cycles in the last 8 or 9 years or so. So there's obviously a lot more to come. Please appreciate your continued support. Please keep sharing these episodes far and wide with people in the mining industry, but also people outside of the mining industry. So as always, appreciate your continued support. And until next time, happy mining.
Thank you for listening. Remember to reach out to Rob via the show notes and be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Until next time, happy mining, helping each other to improve the mining industry.